Ron and Anian.
When you play that instrument, when you're playing that music, when you're into that job, when you're putting the day behind you and your focus is what's in front of you, that's the best time in a repair shop.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
The Car Doctor.
When I see a common problem like this, I would probably do the flash update anyway just to... You know, I have current software. Our belief system is the software makes the hardware work better. You know, at least this way, when we buy the new part, we go, well, we tried everything.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
So, you guys like stories from the repair shop, huh? Well, all right. We'll start off this hour with a good story, and then we'll take the calls and get ourselves going. We've got a lot to do this hour, by the way, giving away our last copy, and I promise we'll do it this hour. I forgot to do it last hour. We got so wrapped up our last copy of Dr. Richard McCann's copy of Classic Car Adventures. That's going out. We've got an O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card, $25 gift card to give away this week for all your pleasant shopping experiences at O'ReillyAuto.com or at a physical store, whatever the case might be. But we've got a $25 O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card to give away, and we've got your calls to answer. So we've got a lot going on, and I think we've got a little bit of a holiday treat coming up at the end of this hour that you guys look forward to, or so you're telling me. Either that or you're all trying to win the gift card by lying to me. I'm not sure which it is, but I think it's enjoyable for you. So we're going to do that this hour, too. I guess the way to start this story is, how many calipers can you put on the front of a vehicle at any one time? Or more importantly, here's something they probably don't teach you in trade school. You know, running a repair shop has its challenges, and you sometimes have to think a little outside the box, and you've got to be prepared for what's going to happen outside the box. About 2 weeks ago, an 02 Nissan pickup truck came into the shop, and it just needed front brakes. It was simple, front brakes on an 18-year-old vehicle. The truck came in the afternoon the day before. We looked at it. It needed brakes. We anticipated we're having to put calipers on it just because of the age. We ordered pads, rotors, and a pair of calipers. We went home. I thought about it sitting at the supper table thinking like I'm not supposed to be. I'm supposed to be involved in the household, but your mind kind of, you know, you're just thinking about that last job in the shop before it totally fades from memory and you're back into the present moment. And I said, you know what? I'm going to need more calipers. Something's going to go wrong with that job. It's 18 years old. I just don't know why. I just had this feeling. I went online, logged into the shop. I ordered another pair of calipers from a different supplier. Okay. Next morning, I got four calipers, two pairs for each side, or two for each side, and a pair of front rotors and pads. And we start doing the job, and sure enough, Danny's taking it apart, and the right front caliper is leaking behind the piston boot. We've got to put a caliper on this. The first pair showed up. And we were grateful for it. We take it out of the box and we go to mount it up. And we find out that the mounting bracket that came in the first set of calipers doesn't match the mounting holes on the vehicle. There's something different. The caliper's the same. The bracket's wrong. Now, there was nothing wrong with the bracket that we had taken off. It was just a metal bracket with slides. So I said to Danny, in the interest of expediting this, because the car had to go, I said, clean up the bracket. How clean can you make it? Well, Danny's pretty meticulous, all right? When I tell him to clean something, it comes out shining. It looks better than it does from the rebuilders. And it was spotless. We bolted that bracket on. We put that caliper on. Hey, we're good. We're moving the day along. We then went ahead and did the pad and rotor, and we moved to the other side. When we got to the other side, the brand new caliper, we found out, had a stuck piston. It wouldn't move. We couldn't get it to work. At that moment, the other two calipers showed up. I said, hey, this is great. We'll use one caliper from supplier A. We'll use one caliper from supplier B. They're both remands. It doesn't matter. They should work fine. Let's just move this job along. It's got to go by 4 o'clock. We put the one caliper on. We're all set. Now we have to bleed the system. We go to bleed it. The right front bleeder, we open it up. No fluid comes out. It's like 11:30, quarter to 12. We're getting ready to go to lunch. I said, let me order two hoses. We'll dig deeper into this when we come back from lunch. We go to lunch. We order hoses. The hoses show up. We go back to look at it. We find out it's not the brake hoses, but it's something in the new caliper itself that we had just put on. Fortunately, I keep thinking of, who is it, Foghorn Leghorn. Fortunately, I keep my feathers numbered for just such an emergency. We then went back to the caliper that we had gotten from supplier B, swapped out the caliper that we had just swapped out from supplier A, took off the bracket that Danny refurbished because the other caliper had the right bracket on it, and finally got the job done. I mean, we had to go through four calipers to get two that worked. And you wonder why mechanics are crazy in terms of what they have to go through to get jobs out the door. And you've got to keep it safe, and you've got to keep it balanced, and you got to make sure it's a job that's not going to be a problem, and that you're doing the right thing all the time, every time, every day. A real story from the Bay. Car went out the road. It bled fine. We didn't have to do hoses. We didn't have to do, you know, four calipers. We only needed the two. We sent the other ones back as defects because they were. The bracket was wrong, and the one caliper wouldn't bleed. And oy vey. I mean, you know, you look at it and you say, how can it happen? And then people call up, or people come in and they want to own a repair shop. That's great. I love owning a repair shop. You just got to really be ready for the unexpected. You've really got to be prepared for what's going to happen outside the box when you least expect it. That's when something's going to hit. And that's really what makes a good repair shop. I think the shops that are prepared, the shops that are thinking ahead, the shops that are planning before, you know, look before you leap, I think those are the ones that will be successful today and in the coming years, because it sure is becoming a very, very difficult business as time goes on, so much more so than it was 30 years ago when I first got into it. Let's kick the garage doors open and let's go over to Kurt in Arizona, 72 Malibu, and some issues with an F-150. So Kurt's going to get two for a nickel today. How can I help you, sir? Welcome aboard.
I love your story about the brake calipers. I'm actually sitting underneath an old military Jeep right now, replacing the brake calipers on it, so very timely.
How many parts do you need to fix a car? All of them. It's just order two of everything, because you don't know what's going to show up, and that's the problem. So how can I help you today, kiddo?
I've got a 72 Chevy Malibu, very first car I owned, and I'm about your age. I hear that if you use regular gas, it will pit the pistons. Because unleaded, what kind of gas should I be using in that? And I don't think you used to be able to buy little things of lead and add to the gas.
Yeah, you know. So I have a very dear friend, Jeff, who was probably, and I consider him, he's probably one of the top engine builders in the tri-state area. And you know, Jeff is like an idiot savant that, you know, you can ask him something mechanical from a 1923 whistle bender, and he'll tell you how many teeth are on the flywheel, which way they were cut, and at what degree and what angle. He's just amazing. You know, he's just one of those guys that keeps numbers in his head that just, it blows me away every time. And I've talked to Jeff about this problem with lead and unleaded fuel, and will it damage the valve seats and the guides and everything else that everybody talks about. And you know, his answer is, it always rings true in my ears, in that you look at the percentage of cars that are having the reported problem versus the ones that aren't, and you say to yourself, how much does it really matter? You know, is it really the gas causing the problem that caused the valve seat to pound out, or the piston to have an issue? I haven't heard the one about the piston causing pitting, Kurt. Maybe people are confusing that with pinging or detonation. I'll tell you what I do, and I'm just more consistent, especially on the older cars, but even on the newer ones, I just buy the same brand or blend of fuel for that vehicle on a consistent basis. I find what brand works best. Lately, for a newer vehicle, I make sure it's tier one, good quality fuel. And that's what I buy. I don't even look at the price. I'm just so happy to get it. I think, you know, if you stop and think about it, for the amount of time you're going to drive that Malibu, unless you're going to drive it on a really regular basis, I don't know that it matters. And, you know, if something were to happen, more importantly than fuel, I'd be more concerned with putting the right type of oil in the vehicle. All right. I would look for something, you know, that's really set up for an older classic car, because today's modern oils, they've taken out so many of the chemicals in the additive packages for fear of contaminating catalytic converters, which that car doesn't have. 73, I believe, was the first year for cats, and it was a different style cat. I would be more concerned with that. So what have you been running in it up to this point?
Well, somebody told me to run premium in it, so I put 91 octane premium in it. That's okay. All I've done.
All right, and
different, but it's not a daily driver.
Right, but it's premium unleaded, right?
Correct.
And how many years have you been doing that?
Oh gosh, I only drive the thing every now and then, so it doesn't go through too many tanks. I've probably been doing that the last 5 years.
Right. Has the engine blown up yet?
nope, nothing's happened yet. I just didn't want to make sure anything happened in the future.
Right. I don't think it's going to happen because of the fuel, and that's my point. So okay. I don't think it's going to matter. And heaven forbid if it does, you wanted a bigger engine anyway. So look, I solved the reason as to why. I avoided the phone call back saying, Ron, do you think I should put a bigger engine in my Malibu? Well, now you have to, Kurt, because the engine, which it's not going to happen, brother, but you get my point. So go ahead. Second question. Second question.
Okay. Second question is on a Ford F-150 210. When I get in it and it's cold, as I go to turn left just a little bit, it catches. The steering wheel kind of catches there. After it's warmed up, it doesn't seem to have a problem. I'm wondering if that's a power steering pump that might be going bad on it or what it is. But just initially catches, and after that, once you turn left, it's okay. But, you know, you go straight again and you go to turn left and it has just a slight catch right there.
A rack or a box truck? Is it a steering rack or a steering box, do you know?
You know, I don't know.
Okay. It's not going to matter. My answer is going to be the same. I don't believe it's the pump. All right? Power steering pumps put out hydraulic pressure. The pump doesn't know or care which way you're turning the wheel, right? Pressure's pressure. Its job is to provide, you know, hydraulic assist. The box or the rack is where the directional challenges come in. And what I have to believe you're experiencing is something similar to, you know, the General Motors products back in the late 80s. And with them, it was racks. But I've seen this on pumps, on boxes also, where the internal seals that help direct or guide in the spool valve section of the steering mechanism which way fluid's supposed to flow for steering assist, the seals start to get dry, brittle, or contract, and until they're warmed up, they don't provide proper channeling of the hydraulic pressure the pump's putting out, and it creates a low pressure, no pressure, or opposing pressure problem. Now, you know, how long does this last? Does it get in the truck, start it up, warm it up, and it's gone within 10 seconds? Is it just that one initial pull? Which, you know, how long does it last for?
You know, it's the first
tug,
minutes probably. That's
so, you know what? Do you have an O'Reilly Auto Parts by you?
I do.
Get down to your local O'Reilly Auto Parts for two reasons. Number one, you want to go in and ask them, do they have anything that's they can sell you for as a power steering fluid conditioner? Let's try emptying the fluid. Let's try doing a fluid change. Put a power steering conditioner in there. Let's see if conditioning the seals and the steering on this vehicle makes the problem go away. Number one. Number two, when you're down there, show them the O'Reilly gift card that we're going to send you, because you're going to stay on the line and Tom's going to get your information. We'll be sending you out a $25 O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card. We want to thank you for your time and being part of the Car Doctor family, and we appreciate what it is you're trying to do out there restoring military vehicles and all. So appreciate the call, Kurt. Stay on the line. Let Tom get your information. Let me pull over and take a pause. I'm Ron Anning, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this.
Whether it's a little red Corvette or a Yugo, you've come to the right place to get that car fixed. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Steven in Iowa, 06 GMC Sierra. Steven, welcome aboard, sir. How can I help?
How you doing, sir?
Good. What's going on?
This pickup, it's an 06. It's low mileage, premium condition.
Okay.
Well taken care of.
Yep.
When I back it out of the garage on a cold morning, it goes, "Urgh!" And then when I drive it down the alleyway and go to the street, it goes, "Urgh!" And then when I drive it down the block, it goes, "Urgh!" And then I don't know where it's coming from. I've been under the hood. I looked at the idler pulley. I took the belt off, checked the idler pulley. I'm looking for vacuum leaks. I'm looking for actuators on the doors down there in the heater box. And I can't figure out where this freaking dirt is coming from.
Where do you think, you know, what's your sense, Steven? Is it under the hood? Is it under the truck? Any idea? Could it be from the brake pads themselves, the way they're gripping the rotors?
Nope. I pulled the wheels here about a month ago and cleaned them all up real nice and clean. It's got nothing to do with brakes. It's got anything to do with speed, because it never changes. It just, if I accelerate it or brake hard, it just.
Okay. Yeah. So it happens whenever you brake.
No, it actually accelerates when I'm just going down the alleyway. The truck's basically cold. It's a cold start morning, And I go down the alleyway, the truck is cold. I go down the street, the truck is cold. I go down, still just going to the gas station to get coffee.
So it does it. It does it while you're driving.
It just does it when I'm driving. When the engine's cold, after everything's warmed up, it doesn't do it anymore.
Okay. Will it do it sitting there in the garage?
If I'm sitting there in the garage, it'll probably do it. Yeah, it'll probably do it just sitting there idling, you know. Maybe not. I can't say for
right.
sure about that.
So why don't we try that? I mean, listen, we've got to at least get a feel for where the noise is coming from. All right.
It's under the dash someplace. I get a feeling it's coming from the forward area.
All right. So, and maybe it is. In which case, sitting there should duplicate it. You know, listen, we've got to cut the problem in half, right? So we've got to get to the middle of the problem as fast as we can. And in this case, getting to the middle is going to be, does it happen when the vehicle's moving or sitting still?
Yeah.
It's a yes or no proposition. I mean, there's more than a few things that make noise on these trucks. These have issues with the PCV valve causing squeaks and squeals. These have issues with the valve lifters going bad, causing all kinds of engine noises. You know, there's a half a dozen things I can run you through, but until we know... is it moving or sitting still? You know, what else is there?
Exactly.
Could it be?
Exactly.
Could it be a brake dragging? Would it make the noise if you tried to stop the truck, popping it in neutral, putting on the parking brake? You know, is
don't know.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes doping something out is doing something different. You know, how do you get to the middle? And then once you get to the middle of the problem, how do you get to the middle of that half of the problem? And then eventually you get yourself down to an eighth of the problem and you solve it. There's no mystery to it. There's something you just know because you're here. I'll tell you what, the compressor in the shop has been acting up, my air compressor. All right. Sailor Beale, the Cadillac of the industry, blah, 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 blah. Well, let me tell you, it may be a Cadillac, but so far Sailor Beale customer service has been anything but. We finally got somebody on the phone, and we explained to them. We noticed that it sounds different. Now when it starts up, it makes a loud whoosh, and when it shuts off, it makes a loud whoosh. And we finally got it to the point where we duplicated the problem. Where you got three guys, me, Danny, and Carpenter Bob, we're on our knees looking under the compressor. We're going, where's this noise coming from? And there's a little threaded port by what we believe or what we're told is the auto drain valve for the water, right?
Okay.
And it's a threaded port, and there's nothing in it. So now we're saying...
Oh, geez.
Right, like what fell out? What vibrated and fell out? What's lost now? And, you know, now we're sitting there, we're going to ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've called Sailor Beale, and Sailor Beale has these distributors, and every Sailor Beale distributor we've called has been out of business, and we're trying to find, just sell me the $20 part, would you please? I got to move my day along. I got to get to the middle of the problem. Listen, Stephen, I really appreciate the call. Stay on the line. Let Tom get your information. Dr. Richard McCann wrote a great book, Classic Car Adventures. I think you'll really appreciate it. Tales of Enthusiasts' Adventures with Anglias, Bentleys, Bugattis, and more. So we'll be sending that out your way. Out Iowa Way. Stay on the line. Let Tom get your info. Merry Christmas to you and yours from the Car Doctor family, and we appreciate you being part of ours. I'm Ron Anani and the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Did, huh? Hi, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. I'm telling Mommy. Robert in Virginia. Tom and his Christmas songs. Robert, how can I help you today, sir? Ron and Annie at your service.
Yeah, so I've got a Ford F-150 2004, and I've got an electronic four-wheel drive switch.
Okay.
And it will only go into high, and it the first time, like when I start it up, I let everything warm up. The first time it goes into high, it takes a while. And then I can't get it into low at all. So I don't know is there a trick or is there something I should look at to make sure it's engaging properly when I click the switch.
Have you owned the truck since new, Robert?
No, I'm the second owner.
Okay. How long have you had it? Have you ever been able to get it into four-wheel drive low?
Yes. When I first bought it, it did go in a couple times, but I don't use, I'm in Virginia, we get one or two good snows, and that's really the only time I would use it.
Okay, so right off the bat, you know that you have to put it in neutral, not park, and the brakes got to be on in order to put it into low, correct?
Yes.
Okay, because otherwise, because this has a four-wheel drive module, this is electronic shift, so if it doesn't see brake input, it's going to ignore the command.
Okay.
All right. So the next stupid comment that I can make is, and there's always a stupid comment I make, do the brake lights work?
Yes.
Okay.
They do.
Well, because if the brake switch doesn't work, if you have no brake lights, that's part of the input circuit for the four-wheel drive. It sees your foot on the brake, and otherwise it won't, I'll fix four-wheel drive vehicles by putting a brake light switch in the truck, and people look at me like I'm crazy.
Right.
All right. But that's where the input comes from. So now we're down to, it works fine in four-wheel high, right? You can get it in and out of four-wheel high. Everything does what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, it's in it right now.
Okay. So we know.
Go ahead. I'm able to put it in four-wheel high just like by going. I don't stop it or anything.
Right,
that bad?
Because this has automatic vacuum hubs up front.
Okay.
Right? You don't have to get out and flip anything. It's shift on the fly four wheel drive.
Correct.
So now the issue is when you put it into four wheel, what happens? Is there grinding or it doesn't engage?
The high works. It goes in and everything's fine. The low, it just won't engage. No sound, no nothing. When I put it into high. Back and forth from two-wheel drive to four-wheel high, I can hear a click in my console somewhere. But when I put it into low, it's just nothing. No grinding, no sound, nothing.
Got it. And you've got it in neutral and your foot's on the brake. I'm going to tell you your next step is I'd really love to see if there are any fault codes in this. They set a P2106, which deals with issues with the command for four-wheel low. They do some other things as far as the shift motor is concerned. Because, understand, take the four-wheel drive transfer case, take the electric motor off the case. There'll be a mechanical shaft there. In theory, you could flip it from high to low by hand. If the hubs are locking in high, then it should go into low. Unless there's a problem, A, in the transfer case, or B, in the electric shift motor. And that's why I want you to pull codes. I want to see if scanning it for codes comes up with anything. It's looking for a response and feedback, and that'll tell you something. You can also probably see, depending upon the scan tool you use, and not OBD2, you're going to have to go in year, make, model. You should be able to see a PID, although I don't know if they did it in 04. It was I've seen it on the older ones, or the newer ones, 08s and stuff, where you can actually see position of that shift knob. You put it in two-wheel, it reports two-wheel. You put it in four-wheel high, it reports four-wheel high, and so on. So this is a case where a scan tool will help cut down on some of your diagnostic time before you start changing some expensive parts. But you're already halfway through the problem. It's not the hubs. That the transfer case works on high. Now you've got to get down to the rest of it. Chances are it's not wiring related. My educated guess would be it's between the motor itself, the shift motor, the knob, or the transfer case. And that's why I want you to scan it. I want to see if any fault codes come up to give you a direction. All right, sir?
Okay. Yeah. Now, so with it taking a while, got all that. I'll do all that to investigate it. With it taking a while to jump into four wheel high, is that a concern, or is it just maybe it's just not warm enough?
What's a while?
I don't know, 5-10 minutes maybe.
Yeah,
I just got the switch and I just kind of let it sit on four wheel high.
That's a problem.
And then all of a sudden it's kicking.
Yeah, okay. that's a problem. I would be looking at, first I would determine, is it really in four wheel at the transfer case? Because what happens is it'll engage at the transfer case, for example, where it's just an on-off motor. Robert, it just takes it and moves it from high to low, low to high, or neutral, or wherever. It'll put it into high. So the transfer case will spin the front drive shaft, and that will spin the front differential. But until this should have vacuum hubs up front, automatic vacuum hubs. Until those hubs engage, you're never going to get four-wheel drive operation. And I've got to say 80% of the problems when there's slow engagement is issues with those front vacuum actuators. Those become the real problem, and that's where I think you want to head. So take a look at those, and we can kind of talk about it from there. All right, if you need more, you know where to find me, 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. Let's go over and talk to Patel in Indiana. Patel, how have you been, sir? Glad to hear from you. What's going on?
Hey, Ron. How are you doing?
Good. What's cooking?
Hey, I have that 12C in an all-wheel drive, which takes the tires really fast, like maybe 20, 30,000 miles.
Right. This is a run flat car, right? Correct?
It is, and I put the regular tires, of course. It's not going to last that long.
Right.
Even the run flat lasted like 40,000, so I thought, let me just go the half mark, like a little bit half-priced tires. But
right.
It's not an issue. The issue is we got the tires, and, of course, it's like kind of prescription. You have to do the alignment. So I did the alignment, and the alignment guy is a friend. He goes, Patel, your front toe is perfect. Rear toe, there is an adjustment. It's a little bit out. So there are two choices he gave me. Like either you open everything up and put the seams there, but he was suggesting there is some aftermarket solution, like big names in the front end parts. They do like adjustment.
Right, Moog.
Control arms.
Moog makes,
right.
Moog makes adjustable control arms and tie rods that you can actually get tow in. Okay.
So I have a buddy who works at Toyota too, and of course it's 3 hours labor. And I thought, if 3 hours labor, I can swap the front end parts myself and get the alignment. I already paid the lifetime alignment twice. The one CS got closed in New Jersey.
Right.
I used to live in New Jersey, and now I paid the Pep Boys guys a lifetime alignment. So I was suggesting, if I do the Moog route, is that the good option to go with?
Yeah, I would. I'd have no problem putting a Moog piece in there. I think Moog makes some of the best aftermarket, you know, front end pieces in the industry. You know, I'm sort of floored when it comes to steering linkage still after 46 years or 45 years in the business that, you know, where Moog will put a grease fitting in and supply some really great technology, some of the manufacturers still don't do grease fittings. I don't get why. You know, they'll tell you that some manufacturers will tell you, the OEMs will tell you that their part is a lifetime, you know, it'll last a lifetime. And I keep thinking, whose lifetime? Because I keep changing them and putting in replacement tie rods and control arms and ball joints. I'm not sure whose lifetime they're talking about.
Their lifetime is like, as you always say, 5 years, 100,000 or 60,000 miles, and you just buy a new one, I guess, the greatest and latest.
just go buy a new car, right, exactly so.
Yeah.
So I have no problem putting the Moog stuff in. Now, that being said, you know, just make sure there are different levels of Moog. We've learned over the last 6 or 7 years. There's no other way to say it. There's a cheaper import line. There is a, you know, what I call their direct line made here in the States, or made with a better quality of component. And you know, I always, whenever I order Moog, I want, for lack of a better way to say it, their frontline stuff. I want their top. I'm not looking to save money on front end parts. And you know, just because, you know, number one, it's labor intensive, but more importantly, it's front end and steering. It's safety. It's, you know, we want to be sure traveling down the interstate at 65, 70 miles an hour. And that's if you're in the slow lane, trying not to get hit by everybody else doing 80.
And I wouldn't trust the Chinese knockoffs anyway.
Right.
The front end, when I'm doing it myself.
Right.
Might as well put the good quality stuff.
You know,
What parts I should replace? The control arm, and while I'm there, do I need to replace the socks too? Because,
Whenever
I put like a little bit of load, it just, minivan just goes like all the way to the close.
Okay, the first part of the conversation was that you needed control arms or tie rod ends for the back, or tie rod, inner tie rod sleeves for the back, right? So there you're going to use Moog stuff. Now you're asking me about control arms for the front?
No, the front, the rear. The fronts are good because the front, he checked it out.
Okay.
Front toe, he fixed it. The front toe is not a problem. The rear ones, he goes, you have a problem with the rear toe and there is no adjustment there.
Well, what I would do is if whatever Moog makes in the way of a problem solver, and I believe they're going to make an upper control arm to give you adjustment for camber and, you know, a toe piece, I would put it all in there, Patel. It sounds like you've got enough kids there that you're going to keep this car for a while. That
I know.
You know, it's you want to try and keep tires on it as long as you can. It would make the most sense, right? You're spending money. What's a couple extra $100 at this point just to make sure the rear of the vehicle is completely adjustable? I think that makes it easier for you and you know, easier in the long run for you know, trying to get the maximum life out of the tires. Now, you know, on to shocks. If you're doing shocks, and that was going to be part of my conversation too, we've actually seen cars, and you know, you'll see them going down the interstate. The car's traveling down the road. The person behind the wheel doesn't realize it, but you're looking at the right or the left rear tire. The tire's bouncing as it moves, and yet the car doesn't.
Right.
The car doesn't shake. It's just that the tire is hitting the road. You know, blah, 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 blah. It's bouncing like a basketball, like a mini ball bounce. You know, yeah. You know, shocks can cause a tire to wear prematurely. They can clearly have an effect. So,
and the thing is, you know, like what they say, you have to be honest with your doctors and your mechanic, because I had a convenience store gas station for 7 years in New Hampshire, and I loaded up like that minivan like no tomorrow. Like I'm guessing 10 water case, 5 Gatorades case, and all that with 5 people in the van.
Right.
So I abused the first 7 years with that minivan loading the Sam's Club, everything I can fit in the car. So I think I might have to replace the spring as well as the sock too, right? They go like together.
I would. Remember, the spring is what supports the car. The shock controls the spring. So
right. And you know, do I have to hit the Toyota for the spring, or I can go with the better quality
price
aftermarket?
Price it both ways. If Moog makes a spring for that, you might as well just buy all Moog. And you know, and then just pick your shock, pick your poison from wherever. You know, do you have a local O'Reilly Auto Parts, Patel?
I do.
Go down and talk to the folks at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Tell them what you're trying to do. You know, maybe they can sharpen the pencil if you're going to, you know, take everything. They're really good. They're very understanding. Not that we had expect them to give it away, but, you know, sometimes there's discounts when you buy more things, so to speak, more parts, and it sounds like you're going to be overhauling the rear end of the vehicle, and it's just going to be
for me, it's like I live literally 5 minutes from the Indiana distribution center, so for me every single part I need they have it
right. Well, and then there's that, and then when you're buying it from O'Reilly Auto Parts, their warranties are right there, and they're really good and knowledgeable, and they'll steer you in the right direction. One thing I know from working with O'Reilly Auto Parts over the years is they've got their car people. They're not just order takers or parts orderers, parts shippers, if you know what I'm saying. So all means, do that. And you know, then get it back, get your parts done. Now remember, when you're tightening control arms that have rubber bushings in them, you want to tighten them at ride height. Don't tighten them up in the air and lower the car. All right, you want to tighten them at ride height. So you may have to put the car supported up in the air, or maybe it's going to be put it together. Get it down to the local shop where you're having the alignment done, where you paid for your lifetime alignment, etc. And you know, when it's up in the air, you'll have to throw the guy a couple of bucks. Maybe he'll do it just because he remembers you. But you want to, you know, loosen the control arm nuts where there's a rubber bushing, and then retighten it, because that bushing will kind of roll and kick because it's under load when you put it together. So do that, and you'll be just fine. Patel, always a pleasure, sir. I'm glad to hear your voice and to know that I've got you still working on cars out there. Hey, speaking of working on cars, you know, as a shop owner, you know, there's just that certain time of the year, that last turn of the key in the door, when you go, wow, what a year it's been. And Christmas Eve has always been kind of special. Coming up next, an adventure not too long ago in the far distant past. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Merry Christmas.
It was the night before Christmas, and all through the dark. Not a car was still broken. All the plugs had their spark. The wrenches were stashed all snug in their boxes, while me by myself was having Christmas party leftovers, some bagels and loxes. When out from the lot there rose such a clatter, I sprang to my feet and yelled, "Hey, what's the matter?" Now what to my bloodshot, tired eyes should appear but some crazy old guy, one sleigh with reindeer? I winced and I cried, oh great, just one more. I'd rather sit back, have a cup of tea and some s'mores. He approached the front door with a smile so bright, I quickly unlocked it and turned back on the office light. Excuse me, kind sir, but I'm having some trouble. The left runner on my sleigh has started to wobble. The balance is wrong and it pulls to the right. The reindeer are working too hard this cold night. I have so much to do and no time left to do it. Do you think that you could? Well, please get right to it. Without saying a word, I went to work right away. Too bad the alignment machine had no specs for a sleigh. Meanwhile, the reindeer were prancing around. That Rudolph and Comet, what a couple of clowns. In a matter of moments, time 1.2, the runner was straight and the alignment done too. I helped him load up, all the presents but one. He left it to pay me. For cash, he had none. I hope it's from Snap-on, a half-inch drive air gun. He started the sleigh by merely calling their names. On Dasher and Dancer, Donner and Blitzen. Get up off your butts, Rudolph, Comet, and Vixen. It started to idle and float in the air. Then Rudolph lit up the sky with his nose extraordinaire. And I heard him exclaim, this could have been quite a mess. The car doctor rings true. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're really priceless.
May your days be merry and bright. And may all your Christmas.